Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. All right, well, we are back. You just had an episode on Friday, and now you have one today, Tuesday. And, you know, the season two is back and better than ever.
Better than ever. We have an unbelievably special guest on the podcast today. Yeah, a little different for us.
So excited. Should we? I think we should wait to introduce it. Until,
yes.
Let's
wait. Okay. We'll do our little peek and pit.
I mean, if you're listening at this point, you might already know because maybe we'll post about it before.
Yeah. I just got more comfortable with Sarah's bed. Anyway, so episode two, season two, we recorded the guest segment separately, so we're gonna talk a little bit about our week and our peak and our pit. Mm-hmm. So do you want to go first?
Sure.
First last time.
Sure. My pit of the week was that this isn't really a pit because I love teaching yoga, but I teach on Saturday afternoon and then again Sunday morning, which doesn't allow much time for me to go anywhere if I want to leave the city,
right?
But that it's kind of intertwined with my peak, because my peak of the week was that I did go to one of my best friends from college. I went to her house in New Jersey with my other best friend from college, and mm-hmm. the three of us just had a really nice time just relaxing, being out of the city. We were at a real house. We played games all night, and then we watched a movie, and we all passed out on the couch. It was just really chill and nice, and we drank wine. But I know it's all kind of jumbled, but the pit is that I just it's a little frustrating sometimes because I don't have much time on the weekend to leave if I want to leave the city.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to rush to Penn Station and then rush back in the morning. And it was just kind of a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. But to end on my peak, I had a really nice time at my friend's house. So yeah, it was really special.
Getting out of the city is so important to the suburbs.
Yeah.
I need to do it more.
Yeah.
That sound when you were just talking about playing games, drinking wine, I started
at a house.
Really desire that.
Yeah.
I need to do that more. Yeah. My pit was this is very specific, but it really was a pit. I babysat one of the nights, and the person who I was babysitting for gave me cash, and I'm usually not to toot my own horn, but I'm very organized. I don't lose things. I'm not scatterbrained. Mm-hmm. I have anxiety. I'm not scatterbrained. And she gave me cash, and at some point between her handing me the cash and me getting to my own apartment, probably 10 minutes later, I took a Via, I lost the cash. And to be honest, it wasn't that much money. So it was less about the actual money that I could have had, which of course that made me very upset too. But it was just I got so mad at myself. I was what's wrong with me? What is the matter with me? Not taking care of cash. And I felt so wasteful and careless and just frustrated that I made it a whole point to babysit, to make extra money. And then I literally lost the money that I was given. It was really hard, but it was a good learning moment of just being careful about the money, mm-hmm. and remembering that it's important, and also knowing it could have been a lot more money. I've been handed more cash before. So it really was it was okay. And mm-hmm. I'm already starting to get over it, but that was,
it's very frustrating, especially because it's out of your control, that you lost it. So it's
you can't go back and be hey, you actually didn't pay me, right? Because she did. And I was the one who held the cash. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah. That's frustrating. I kind of I mean, it's completely different, but we went to, Liz and I went to a Kacey Musgraves cover night.
Oh yeah. 54 Below.
And there was a $25 minimum that I was so full when we went that I didn't even want to buy anything, but I got a glass of wine, which fine. I didn't even finish it. And I was pissed about that because I should have, but I was so full and I was forcing myself.
Right.
And then I forced myself again to get mashed potatoes to go because that fulfilled the money.
The minimum. Yeah.
And then I got home and I forgot to put the mashed potatoes in the refrigerator. And then the next morning I was fine, I'll put them in the fridge. And everyone was
that's gross.
That's gross. And I kept it in the fridge. I was maybe I'll eat it. And then I never did. And it's what a waste of money. It's so annoying.
Sarah, I totally know what you mean. And we were talking about this even before we started recording. When we're always trying to budget and save money and spend it when we really want to, when we find concert tickets, we're whatever, I'll spend the money.
Yeah.
And then so sometimes when we just have to spend an extra $10 on something and we lose it, yeah. or we waste it, it gets
hurts.
To me.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have enough money right now.
I don't
to be
even have $10 to just throw away.
Totally.
I want to know where every dime is going.
Totally. And I'm so sympathetic to that. And it can really, as much as it's like, okay, it was $15, what, like, it, yeah, it's in the grand scheme of life, not that much money, but it's something more. It just feels like, what the heck is wrong with me? Like, it's, I, like,
so frustrating.
I totally get that. And very similar to, excuse me, very similar to my experience.
Yeah.
My peak, which I,
oh my gosh, I didn't even let you get to your peak.
Oh, no, it's okay. My peak, which I'm now realizing the irony of it. I wrote it down and I didn't even think about it, but I wrote that I'm feeling more organized. Like, I'm not feeling organized about the thing that I, like, lost some money, but that's not really an organizational thing. That was truly like a mishap.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, several weeks ago, Sarah and I did an episode about, like, trying to manage our schedule and feeling overwhelmed. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure that there's going to be a time in the near future when I'm feeling overwhelmed again. But I think over the past week, I've had a lot of different things going on, a lot of things scheduled. And I feel like I finally, like, figured out a way to keep it all, like, under control for the most part. So that's felt really good. Like, I've been relying a lot on my planner and, like, visualizing everything. And it's really satisfying to me when I see, like, different appointments, things getting done, things getting checked off boxes. So I'm proud of myself for having sort of figured that out. So it's been good.
Awesome.
And then my, not really, it's, this is a mutual peak, but in terms of the episode we're about to share, Sarah and I, can I, like, go into it?
Yeah, this is a total peak, actually.
This is the peak of our week. Like, Sarah and I got to interview a, we called him a Barstool personality. Like, how would you describe? Well, we interviewed Jared Carabas. Yeah. And maybe a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with him, or maybe some of you are. He's a really big Barstool guy. He hosts Starting Nine podcast. He's a huge Red Sox fan. He's just, like, a very well-known name in the Barstool world, in the sports world. And this was special to us because, well, for so many reasons, but namely because we don't ever really have, like, men come. We had Jeff come on and he had an incredible story, but, you know, so much of what we talk about and the people we invite on are women, which is amazing, but we don't really have, like, a lot of men, and we didn't just get a man. Like, we got a Barstool guy.
The man.
We got the man. So
Jared's listening to this, like, oh, wow, cool.
Cool, great.
Actually, I don't know if you're thinking that, Jared.
You know, whatever, however you want to think about this, but it was just, it's just really awesome. And Sarah and I, like, we always talk about being inclusive, and obviously Barstool is just, like, so different from us, but that's what I really like about this guest, and, like, the perspective that he brought and how he himself is extending the conversation about mental health to a market that maybe never, like, very rarely hears about it.
Yeah.
So we're just overjoyed that he came on.
Yeah. Very thankful, very happy, and excited to hear thoughts and, for us to continue to grow this conversation around mental health.
Yeah, that's been our goal for so long. So the more people we can get to talk about it, however, you know, different they are from us or similar, like, we want to hear from all different types of people. And we're just really glad Jared came on to talk about his experience with mental health. And we hope that it reaches new audiences. That's, that's, like, how I feel about this.
Same. I feel the exact same way. Anyway,
we're going to bring you our episode with Jared Carabas.
Enjoy.
Enjoy. So we are joined today by Jared Carabas. I wrote Barstool personality, Red Sox writer and fanatic, host of the podcast Starting Nine and Section 10. Correct. Do you have anything you want to edit or add?
I think that covers it, I think, right?
So, we also have Bryn in the studio.
Yeah, we have Bryn in the studio.
Oh, yeah, CCK
here.
On SiriusXM. Forgot about that. Yeah, thank you, Bryn.
Thanks, so, Bryn. so Bryn and Jared work together.
Yeah.
Bryn is Sarah's roommate.
And friend. I don't like to really classify her as my roommate because she's my best friend. Yeah. Sorry, Liz. So just to start off, like, you know, we want to learn more about you and how you got your start. And, you know, just tell us a little bit about how you got to where you're at.
So, I mean, I started blogging when I was 16. I was a junior in high school. And I started, how old are you guys?
I'm
23.
I'm 25.
Okay, so you guys probably weren't on MySpace.
Oh, no.
You were?
Fully.
I wasn't.
Okay.
Well, I had a top 8 and everything.
Got it. Yeah. So, like, back then, like, I was 16. Like, I couldn't afford, like, web hosting or, like, a designer. So my Red Sox blog started as a MySpace, and I wrote on there, and then a few years later just, like, started my own website, and then that evolved, got noticed by Barstool. I had known Dave, who's the owner, and just got paid like $100 million. I had known him since like 2011 because he hosted the New England Sports Blog Awards, and I won a bunch of shit. Can I swear on this?
Yeah.
Go for it.
I won a bunch of shit that night. And we connected, and then like a few years later, I ended up at Barstool.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And the rest is sort of history.
Yeah. There's, I mean, that's the watered down version. There's obviously like a lot to that, like a lot of like random things that happened that kind of put like all that together. But, yeah, no, it's kind of like right place, right time, knowing the right people, getting in at the right time, because, you know, now, like when I started, I remember, like, if you wanted to get into like writing, you had to end up at a newspaper. And I was like, I don't want to go to a newspaper. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to get a journalism degree. Like, I already have a writing style. I don't need someone to teach me how to write when I can already do it. And like, I don't want to write the way that you tell me to write. I want to write the way that I want to write. So I was more than happy to just do it as a hobby. But as I kind of evolved as a writer, the industry was evolving. And like, mm-hmm. that's when like Barstool went from like a small Boston blog to this powerhouse media company that's valued at $500 million. Just my progression aligned with Barstool's progression. And that's how it went from, you know, when I started there, I was getting paid $500 a month part time to basically work full time, to like, now it's just like a full time job, and they pay me more than I probably deserve. So, yeah, I just got lucky.
I'd say you're probably the first person we've had on who we would deem a public figure. I mean, you have a good Instagram, Twitter following, which is like, mm-hmm. you know, how we kind of have learned a little bit more about you doing yeah. our research. But, we actually like came to talk to you because you were on the Kirk Minahane show. Is
yes.
that right?
Okay. Yes.
And you talked a little bit about like, I think that this type of anxiety relates both to everyone and maybe particularly to you, mm-hmm. because you talked about kind of going out places and being recognized and mm-hmm. how that can make you feel some type of way. So
oh, yeah.
do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, talking about that on the show? What sure. kind of response you got?
I don't even remember what I said. That's the thing, is like, I merely scratched the surface of what I could have said. Mm-hmm. I was blown away by the response. Like, when people listen to that show and like they reached out, they're like, hey, like, you know, thanks for talking about going to therapy. Like, now I'm going to like do it myself. I'm like, that's awesome to hear. But in terms of like telling my story, I did not even like, I told less than 1% of what I could have actually said on the topic. But yeah, I mean, like, in terms of, cause we were talking about like what we were doing down in Miami. We were there for a week for the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and I went to the Celtics game with like a couple of my coworkers. And in like the first quarter, I was sitting next to Casey Smith, who's my co-host on radio. And I was like, I can't be here. And she's like, what's going on? I was like, feel my back. And it was just like pouring sweat. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I don't want to be here. Like, so we had three seats with us, and then two of us had seats down on the like court side. They were going to switch at halftime. So I was like, when you switch to go down there at the half, like, I'm leaving. And mm-hmm. she was like, it's that bad. And I was like, yes. I was like, if you weren't here, that like if you weren't here for the first half, I would have left in the first quarter, but like I can wait until you leave and then I'll leave. So I left, and like we started talking about that, and he's like, I mean, like I've never talked about that, because with Barstool, I mean, like, you play a character. Like, in the more popular people at the company are characters, or at least like exaggerations of their true personalities. And my character is this loudmouth douchebag asshole. And like, I can't do that and pull that off successfully while also being like, well, actually, you know, like when I'm in public, I get really shy and like uncomfortable. And it's like, that's not who the character is. Mm-hmm. So I would rather like suffer and not talk about that to like protect the character, because I know that the character works. Like, mm-hmm. people react to it. Like, I'm not going to give people ammo to sort of be like, all right, well, like, I know deep down you're this person. Mm-hmm. Like, the person that you're acting like is not you. But I feel like all along, like, people, like, some people get it, some people don't. Like, some people think that that's really what I'm like in real life. I'm not. But I know how to stir the pot, and I know how to get a reaction, and it's that way, which oftentimes is like difficult for me to do. But I know that in our industry, in our business, like, you want people to either love you or hate you. And I have both, which is, you know, like in Boston, like, you know, when we walk down the street in Boston, it's ridiculous, like the reaction that we get. And then in New York, like, I live here now, and like, I can't walk down the street to get a pizza without like someone being like, dude, go fuck yourself. You know what I mean? It's crazy. But that's what you want. Like, you want, you want to elicit a response. You want people to feel one way or another about you. So like, I put myself out there in that way. But like, you know, when I can only do it so much, like I've described it as like, you know, like I'm a battery that like needs to be charged, and like charging is being alone. Like I can go out there and I can do that. I can do live shows. I can do meet and greets. I can do like radio. When we go to the Super Bowl, like we're on stage and stuff, like I can do all that, but I need my time to just be by myself. And like, that's when I like recharge like the social battery. And if I don't, like, that's when it gets really, really, really bad for me. And like, I saw that last year at the Super Bowl when we went to Atlanta. Like this year we had a hotel, like we basically like rented out the whole hotel, was our company. So like after radio, I would just go back to the hotel and I would sit in there for like 2-3 hours. And like, if I was ready to come out for like dinner or like whatever we were doing that night, I could do it. But last year we rented this like mansion, and like, I didn't have my own bathroom. I didn't have my own bedroom. Like, there would just be some nights where I would just go and like literally lay in a closet because I just needed to be alone. And even still, like, I didn't feel, like I was given the opportunity to quote unquote recharge, because I was like, this isn't even my closet. Like, this is like someone was given this bedroom. They're letting me use it for right now. Mm-hmm. But like, if they wanted to come in here and be like, hey, I need the room, like, I'd have to leave. And then where the fuck do I go? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like that's just like been a thing for me for like a while.
I was going to say, so this sort of anxiety that you've experienced being around people constantly,
yep,
did that start when you started being around Barstool people, or have you always kind of lived with this?
Yeah, so like, I in high school, super shy. Like, I was class president my junior year, and there was like one time where we had to like go up on stage and like address the entire class, and I couldn't do it. So like, I'd like faked like laryngitis and had my like VP go up there and do it. Like, she's like, you know, she was in like the drama club, like she was used to doing that. I couldn't do it. So like, I don't know that I would have the job that I have if it wasn't for, in 2007, the Red Sox had an election for president of Red Sox Nation.
No way.
And I like, the people that read my blog just like wrote me in a million times. It was like Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Dennis Leary, like Peter Gammons, like all these fans, and then Jared Carabas, like the 18-year-old Red Sox blogger. So, I mean, I was like, I don't know what you want me to do. Like, I can't do this. Like, when I first started, when I was like 16, 17, around there, I used like a fake name. Like, I didn't want people to know who I was. I didn't want like people to find out anything about me. So like, that was when I like came out from like behind the curtain, was because they were like, hey, you made like the top 25 for like candidates in this thing. And then it was a top 10. And then if you made the top 10, you had to go on a debate that was on TV. No. It was, yeah. Like, so they had like a televised debate with like six of us, and I'm just standing up there like, what the fuck?
Was
like,
Matt Damon there?
Yeah, I was gonna say,
no,
Matt
it Damon, was like, Ben Affleck, like, and Jared. Yeah, I mean, it was, there was no Matt Damon. Like, a lot of the people that, like, the celebrities that kind of got named, they were like, yeah, like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm not gonna fly in for this thing. But yeah, so like, that was my first time on TV, and you kind of just like, you know, trial by fire, where I never would have volunteered to do that. But because like the people that read my blog were like voting for me to do it, I was like, all right, well, I mean, I owe it to them to at least
try.
Yeah. So I did that. And then just like every year it kept growing and growing to where
You become president?
So there's a big like controversy about that, where I don't think that they thought that I was like, they didn't know me. Everyone else, they were trying to like control it. It's like Jerry Remy is like the Red Sox broadcaster.
Okay.
So they trust him. Like the president like had like responsibilities. They were basically the face of the Red Sox fan base. So they wanted someone safe. They didn't know who I was then. So like Jerry Remy won, and then like some other guy came in second who like had a relationship with one of the owners. And then they were like, yeah, you're third. And I was like, I don't know. Cause like the people that were voting, like my, like MySpace page back then had like 150,000 friends that were just insane. Like they, I guarantee you that like vote total wise, I probably had the most votes, but they were like, I don't know who this 18-year-old kid is. We can't just make him the face of our franchise, like for like the fans. So the next year they did governors, which is like you are the fan representative for your state. So like they made me the Massachusetts one. So like I got in somehow, and then like that led to like, hey, we need you to host a watch party. Hey, we need you to like shoot a commercial. Like I started doing like commercials, and I was like 19 years old. So like it's always kind of like I've been doing like TV commercials, like being in like some sort of like not public figure, but like not living like a normal private life since I was 18. So like I should be used to it, but with you know the I basically existed within the Red Sox community, and then with the explosion of Barstool, it's like, well, now you're everywhere. Like now, like before, it's like I'm only exposed to people that like me. Like
like those were your fans.
Yes, yeah. It's like if you're a Red Sox fan, why wouldn't you like Jared? Like Jared loves the Red Sox. You love the Red Sox. He talks about the Red Sox. We're all having a great time. And then, you know, you get into like the Barstool world and it's like, well, now a lot of people hate you and a lot of people want to see you fail. And a lot of people are going to say some really mean shit to you every single day. And it's part of your job to look at social media. Like you, I have to look at Twitter. I have to look at Instagram. I have to look at like my emails. I have to look at like all like the private messages and stuff because I mean, like news could break and like I could get like a tip from like my DMs. I could get like set, like there could be something that's valuable to me in there. So like you kind of have to punish yourself or like put yourself through looking all this at all this like horrible shit about yourself for the payoff. And like oftentimes there is a payoff. It's like, hey, by the way, like, you know, I have some like a tip for you. And then like you use that and it elevates you up the ladder. So it's kind of a really messed up system. It's kind of like a really weird way to like live your life, but I guess I'm used to it. But I would say like with the anxiety thing, I don't know why it got worse, but definitely in the last year it got worse, which is why like I was talking to Brent. I was like, I don't know that I want to like do the podcast because like I'm not a success story yet. Like it's still very much like an ongoing thing. Like it happened twice in Miami. Like I like when I went to like the Celtics game, I had to leave. When I went to the Barstool party, I left before the party. It was like we had a Super Bowl party on Friday night, and it was like the first half was like the boxing part of it, and then the second half was like this like, you know, like rave basically. And I left during the boxing because I was like, I'm not sticking around for this. Like I can't do that. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a weird, weird lifestyle, but, I guess you kind of get used to it, like, or at least some parts of it. But
yeah. And here's the funny thing about like success story, quote unquote, is like our whole podcast is about, it's a success if you're able to even just be like, I think I'm struggling or I think I have anxiety. Like, I think it makes such an incredible impact on others when someone, especially someone who, you know, I think with someone like you who's now getting like hate, it's like they want to push your buttons because they think that they can say whatever because they don't, they want to see, like, they think that people in your position are like invincible, and they want to, they want to try and break you down because they want to feel like they can relate to you. And they're like, well, these people, you know, they don't struggle at all with anxiety, so I'm going to push their buttons as much as I can. But it's like the second you come out and say, you know, actually, like I do struggle a little bit, people are like, whoa, like it's just, a lot of people don't talk about it. Like a lot of public figures don't talk about it. And so I think that is a success in itself. And it inspires people all the time.
I will say this though. I think it definitely hurt more before because like when you're used to getting nothing but praise, those one or two people that are like, you suck or like whatever, those are the ones that hurt way more. Now it's almost like you get like a ton of love and a ton of hate, and like the hate is just like, it's noise. Like you don't really pay as much attention to it because A, it's unoriginal. Most of it is just the same shit over and over again. Mm-hmm. And if you're confident in your ability, which like I am, like I'm not one of those people that's like, yeah, I mean, like I have depression and anxiety and like, woe is me. Like that's not me at all. Like I know I'm good at what I do. So like there's nothing that anyone could ever say to me that would make me doubt that. It's usually just like being around people. And it's usually just like, I mean, no one wants to, you know, when you're feeling down, like no one wants to read like, hey, kill yourself. Like no one, like it doesn't matter like at all. Like no one wants to see that. But in terms of like people like saying horrible shit to you, it, when the volume of it is so like intense, like it's, you almost just like scroll by. It's just noise at this point. Like I used to, there was one point probably up until like last year. It's like kind of like a recent thing. Or like the volume of my interactions on like Twitter, I used to be able to read every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Now I can't. Like now it's impossible. So, but I do try to look because, you know, if there's someone tweeting me something that I can quote tweet and make into a funnier tweet to benefit me, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just like a complete waste of time. And I was talking about that the other day. Like, you know, how much time do you spend looking at your mentions? And then how much of that, like, how much of that do you actually find valuable? Like 1%, like less than 1%. But yeah, but you still got to look, like it's part of the job. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, I've kind of always felt that way and been like that. And I think in the past year, it's kind of just like evolved into something else. Like I never used to not be able to like go out places. I think a lot of it is, I think, living in New York has contributed to that because when I go out in Boston, it's like, all right, yeah, people here might know who I am, but they probably like me. Going out here, like I don't go out here, or I don't go out in like other cities because like, all right, people here might know who I am, but I don't know if they like me or not. And if we're at a bar, now there's alcohol involved. So it's like, am I going to like want to like go out with like my friends and get like berated by people that don't know the difference between like who I really am and who the character I portray is? Like you wouldn't go up to John Cena on the street and be like, dude, why'd you do that on like Monday night? Right. Like, why'd you like put that guy through the table, dude? Like you wouldn't do that. So like, that's kind of like the weird world that we live in. And like, you kind of just have to adjust accordingly.
Right. Like you're not, you know, you're not John Cena level in terms of fame, but you're also not like a normal person who can just walk into a bar. Right. And I think that's an interesting position to be in because people can feel like they can say whatever they want to you.
Correct.
And so I can only imagine like what type of anxiety that can create for you.
Right.
Also, like, I think anxiety is really multidimensional, and that's like what we talk about here. It's really interesting that you said, you know, I'm good at what I do and I don't doubt that. Mm-hmm. But it seems like a lot of your anxiety doesn't necessarily stem from self-doubt, but it stems from like constant fodder and like being around people all the time and potentially being at risk of like people just yelling at you in public. You go through people yelling at you and you're on your Twitter all the time, and it doesn't seem Twitter's like that really bothers you.
Yeah,
like
Twitter's harsh.
Twitter is really harsh. So I'm saying like, it's interesting because I think, you know, plenty of people have anxiety and it might manifest itself in different ways, but it sounds like yours really comes from actually being like in front of people.
Yeah. Like, one of my friends owns a bar in Hoboken, and I've only been there one time, but when I did go there, like I was kind of like sitting at a table in a corner by myself, and like some dude like just starts like doing like thumbs down and like booing me or whatever. And it's like, all right, like I can let that roll off my back. I'm like, all right, whatever. And which is fine. Like if you're playing along, I can play along. Like, it's not like when I'm out, like I'm not approachable, especially like if you're a Yankee fan, I'm a Red Sox fan. Like, you can talk shit about your team, I'm going to talk it back and you're going to look stupid when I'm done with it. But this guy, after doing it, he like took his phone out and just like stuck his phone in my face. Like I was like a zoo animal. Mm. So I was like, all right, dude, like I like push it out of the way. I was like, if you want to like talk shit, like I'm fine to do that. But like, none of that. And then like he took it out again and I just fucking slapped it across the bar. I was like, go pick that shit up. like that, something like that, where it's like, don't treat me like I'm not a human being. Right. And I'll be fine. But like, situations like that where you feel like you're backed into a corner, like, yeah, like that's it's just not going to end well. But yeah, it's not like I can't, like I can play along. Like if you're respectful and like whatever, that's fine. It's the people that are just absolute dickheads that like make you not even want to like leave your apartment.
Obviously we're two women, so we don't know as much about like men's experience with mental health, and it's something we're trying to talk about a little more. And literally like when we heard we could talk to you, it was like, okay, this is like a real guy that we're talking to, because it's like Barstool is like the epitome of masculinity. Yeah. So we thought it'd be a really good opportunity to try and, you know, get into that subject a little bit. And like, how do you think that your experience with mental health is like different because you're a guy, if you can speak for that?
Well, also, sorry, just before you start, as a male, but also at Barstool, in the sports world.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's one of those things that more men probably go to therapy than you would think. I went for 5 years. I went from like 2010 up until like I started full time at Barstool. And the only reason why I stopped going was because like back then there was more of a demand to like be on top of everything and be available 24/7. Like if I was in therapy and something broke, like it's like that should be on the website within 20 minutes. So like, I wouldn't be able to like explain to my boss, like, yeah, sorry, it wasn't on the blog. Like I was in therapy. Like that was just like not a conversation that I wanted to have. So I just stopped going. And that was, yeah, like probably like 2016 is when I stopped going. And then I came here and, I like had never really experienced like a full-blown panic attack before, where like, you know, you're like your breathing's affected and like all this other, like you just feel numb. And when that happened, I was like, yeah, I think we should probably go back.
Welcome to New York.
Like the whole like anxiety thing had like evolved for me to the point where I was cutting off everybody. Like Bryn knows, like I suck at communication, like in general, but like I wasn't answering anybody's text messages, like my friends, like I wasn't answering like my mom. And if I did, they was all like one word answers. And like that even like was difficult to even like respond at all. So I was like, yeah, this is not normal. So we're gonna have to go back. And like, there were a couple of girls in the office that, they go to like a therapist that's kind of like near the office. So like that kind of made it easier for me, because my whole, like, I'm an easy like making excuses guy, where like if I can think of one excuse to not I'm like, if I can think of an excuse that makes it easier for me to not do something that I really don't want to do, then like I'll do it and I'll try to like stick to that logic. And I was like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to go somewhere that's like this far away. Like, what if I have to come to the office? And they're like, it's literally like 3 blocks from the office. And I was like, okay. So yeah, I started going there. I'm probably like 4 sessions in, maybe 5. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't care about talking about it, like, especially like on radio or like Kirk's podcast, because it's not new to me. Like, this office is new to me. And it's been a while, but like, you know, if you've been in therapy for 5 years, like it's not like a new concept. Mm-hmm. Like I know what it's about. But I think the difference between going now and when I went before is that like I need something new out of it. Yeah, like I mean, like it's like when you go for like depression, it's much different to be like, hey, like now it's like anxiety, which is like they go hand in hand, obviously. But like if you were to do like a balance of which one was more each time, like this one is for sure like more anxiety than depression, I think. But yeah, like I don't care. Like there's no stigma for me, because like I don't care. Like what do if you're talking about like the approval of like a friend or a stranger or a girl that you're interested in, like if you think it's weird that I go to therapy and that like I have anxiety, you're not a person that I want in my life anyway. So like there's no, like I don't give a shit like what you think about it. And now I also know that if I talk about it like publicly, that it will motivate other people that need to go, which is great. You know, I got that like message a ton of times after Kirk's podcast, someone being like, you know what, like I've been dealing with the same thing and like I've been putting it off, and like that really got me off the ledge to go. And I'm like, you know what, dude, great for you. Because like they were all guys, like there were zero messages from girls being like, wow, like that really, you know, got me to go. It's like, it's all guys that like think that like they're too tough to go. Right. It's like, dude, it's not like, who fucking cares? Like, it has nothing to do with like how tough you are. Like, if you need to talk to someone and you feel like you don't have like that someone in your life that you can talk to about anything, like that's really all it is, you know?
Do you think that sports, like athletes, I guess I personally don't see athletes talking about it much. Like, do you think that there's a stigma amongst them, or do you feel like they're just not talking about it because they don't feel like they have to, or do you think there's a stigma?
I think there's a stigma because literally just yesterday, like an athlete told me that he's going to see a therapist because like he saw like my tweets like about, you know, people reaching out to me after Kirk's show, and he's like, yeah, man, like I just honestly, like I've been depressed, and like, so I'm gonna see a therapist. And I was like, good for you. Like, I was like, I hope it works for you. And you know, like you can talk to me, obviously, like if you feel like weird about like talking to like a complete stranger, like we're friends. But obviously he's not saying that publicly. Like he's not being like, you know, if he's never been yet, like I understand it, but like maybe he says something about it later. But a lot of these guys, like whether, I mean, there's obviously a difference between like a therapist and like a sports psychologist. Like a lot of these dudes, they need sports psychologists because they need to deal with like, oh my God, like the fans are booing me. Or a lot of guys that like, you know, baseball players, if they get hit like in the head or something, like in the batter's box, like now they're like freaked out. Or like a pitcher that gets hit with a comebacker, like they'll see like a sports psychologist. But like an athlete that just needs to see a therapist the same way that I would, I've yet to really see any of them like speak publicly about it. Like maybe they have, but I haven't seen anything. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't give you a name. But I do know that one is now, and it's, you know, I guess, as sports fans, there are definitely a lot of people that just don't view them as people. You know, it's like you're robots. Like you play a sport, you make $30 million. Like what problems could you have in life? And it's like, well, the answer to that question is a lot. Like it's the same problems that we have as poor people. Plus like they have all this other stuff going on. Right. So, but there is, I mean, there definitely is a stigma, like for sure with them. Like they probably feel like, you know, if I were in that position, like, you know, you're, the last thing you want is like when you're on the road, like people like taunting you about that. Mm-hmm. Like that's not
right.
Cause they will, you know, like there's definitely fan bases that have no remorse for what they say. So like, that's definitely a thing.
So my frame of reference is Philadelphia Eagles fans.
Yeah. Because
that's where I'm from. Uh-huh. And I know, Brandon Brooks, I think that's his name. He like missed a couple games this season because he had such bad anxiety that he was throwing up. And he said, you know, like, this is something I always deal with, but it was bad enough that I couldn't like muster energy for the game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even just some of the things that I saw, and I don't follow like Eagles Twitter that closely, it's a nightmare. that, you know, they were just completely roasting him because, I mean, it's obviously Philly is a tough city, but you know, when you're such a strong fan base for a sports team, there's very like, there's such high expectations for the players, and if you can't show up because you're dealing with something that we can't even see, then like that's something that people can't really wrap their minds around. Because when you see a physical injury, it's a little bit different, but like mental injuries or mental, you know, illnesses are just as important and significant, if not more. And it's just, it's a weird thing, because when you see injuries on the field all the time, and I actually like make fun of athletes a lot because I'm like, you're being a baby, just get up. Mm-hmm. But like when it comes to mental health, it's like not even a conversation, and the very little that it is, it's like it's not necessarily accepted. So
yeah,
I mean,
like, I like on that same note, like I've gone back and forth on it a bunch of times because I've never talked to like my boss about it, their CEO. I've like never really talked to them about it because like I can handle it on my own, and I never want to feel like I'm giving them a reason to like not like trust me or believe in me or have faith in me to be able to do something. Like if there's like a major opportunity, right, I don't want them to like cross my name off the list, because right, it's like, well, you know, he's got anxiety, so like right, we can't trust him to do that. Like I never want that to happen. So like there's been times where like I am not in a position where I want to like go do a show or record something or like do like a meet and greet, but I do it because like I want to be the guy that they know that they can depend on. So like there is an element of that where Like, and if I told them this, they'd be like, of course you can tell us that. Like, of course we're not going to like look at you that way. Like, I know that, but like, I still just would prefer to, you know, keep it to myself and kind of like handle it as like an internal thing. Like, I don't think that I would really benefit from telling them, because I think it almost makes it worse when like people ask you like, how are you doing? Like, how are you doing? Like, I'm fine. Especially if you're having like a good day and it's not on your mind. Right. Now it is.
Right.
It's like,
bring it up.
Cause you're not asking me how my day is. You're not asking me like what I'm up to. You're just like, how's the anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. you sad today? You having a sad day? It's like, right. No. I'm having a fine day. But right. now I'm thinking about that because you asked me. Like, right. I don't need people to ask me. So that's kind of like the same thing where it's like, I never, ever, ever want to give like my bosses or like the decision makers a reason to feel like they can't trust me to do something. Cause like, even if I feel like I can't, like I'm going to do it. Like, I've never once been like, I need a personal day. And like, sometimes like that's okay. But like, that's not how I got to where I am, by like taking personal days. Like, I'll deal with it when I have time to deal with it. So like, that's just how I've always approached it.
Do you think that therapy, you know, your most recent visits like in New York have helped you with this?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely been like a lot of things that I already knew, but it hits you differently hearing them from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like when you're like dealing with certain things, and like, I'm a self-manager. Like, I've always kind of done that. And like, this career is that way where, you know, like when you get hired, you just go. It's like, just do it. Like, mm-hmm. do whatever you're going to do. Like, whatever you want to do, like, go do it and just be the best at it. So with like mental health, it's been the same way. It's like, I know what I need to do, but like, I don't know, like, I'm not going to do it unless someone tells me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of been like a big difference maker, is like, I know how to make this situation better, but I'm not going to do it because like, I'm not talking to anyone about it. Like, no one is like hearing how bad it is and then giving me advice on how to fix it. It's just me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just dealing with this alone. But then you add in like the therapy, and it's like, all right, like, I'm hearing it from someone who's like, it's their profession. Like, that's what they're, you know, paid to do. And they obviously know better than me, but they're still telling me all the things that I already know. But just like hearing it from that other person makes you be like, all right, like, I actually need to do this mm-hmm. now. Like, you know, not reading the negative stuff about it. Just like, why right. would you do that? Like, you're a masochist. Like, there's no need to right. like, you're searching for it. Like, there's no need to like go looking for bad things that people are saying about you. So if you can limit that, like, great. Like, don't, like, there's no need to go looking for it. So like, I've kind of gotten a lot better at just, you know, like, and a lot of people like at our company have said that, like, you can't like let that stuff consume you, because it'll keep you from doing more or doing like what you're good at. Like, if you're afraid to fail, or if you're afraid to like try something new, or just like put out something new that you think is good because you think that the reaction is going to be negative, you're never going to grow. Like, you're never going to climb the ladder. So that's why, like, I just stopped caring. Like, cause I know that if I put stuff out there, there will be people who like it, but you definitely can't please everybody. And like, I know that, that's the goal at first, especially like when I first started there, like, my approval rating 100%. Because they already had a Yankee writer who's an idiot. I love him, but he's an idiot. And by comparison, next to him, I looked like the next coming of God. It was like, this guy versus this guy. Like, there's no contest. But then, you know, it's sort of that thing where it's the new shiny toy.
Mm-hmm.
When people are new, they love them. They elevate them to a level that maybe they don't deserve to be at. And then the drop off is what you have to deal with. Like, that's what you're stuck with. So like, I've seen it a million times. Like, I've been there for over 5 years now. When someone is brand new, everyone loves them. Everyone thinks that they're the greatest hire in the history of the company. And then it's, do you have staying power? Like, when you first get there, everyone's going to love you. And like, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now, like, do people still give a shit what you have to say? And I think I've done a pretty good job of making the answer to that question yes. Have we picked up some haters along the way? Yes, we have. But some of that is by design. You know, like, I've brought some of that on myself, being a Red Sox guy, needling Yankee fans. Like, they're mm-hmm. obviously going to dislike that. And you kind of just have to bob and weave through the people that don't get that it's an act.
I also think it must be important to have people that hate you because it fuels like the conversation and the competition. And so it's like all part of the fun of it too.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's, I've always compared this job to professional wrestling. Like you don't want to go through the curtain and hear nothing. Like you either want to hear a bunch of cheers, you want to hear a bunch of boos, or a combination of both. Mm-hmm. And like, you want to make people feel something. And I have done that. So, it's just a matter of like, you know, some days those boos, they sound a little bit louder. Like if you're not having a good day, like outside of work, like if it's just like, today I feel anxious, like I don't know why, can't explain it. And then like, you know, you read something horrible about yourself and it's like, well, now we're going to spiral. Mm-hmm. Versus like if I'm having a great day, like today I got a shit ton of hate today because like I was coming at the Yankees for like cheating and like my entire mention, just horrible tweet after horrible tweet. But it's like you kind of look at it and you're like, yeah, like I'm making you dance like the little puppet that you are. It's like you can take pride in it sometimes. It's a very weird dynamic.
I think we should start wrapping up, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I want to keep
I don't care.
I have a final question that I think will probably like lead us into a hopefully some good advice from you. Mm-hmm. But basically, we have like a lot of missions here at the pod. Like, I think our main ones are trying to get more people to talk about mental health and to try and encourage people to find, you know, people in their life that they can talk to about it, whether that be like a family member, a friend, a therapist. And, you know, I kind of want to know, like, if people are coming here to listen to you in a totally new light, like, what would you say to those people who are listening or even to regular listeners of our podcast who might be listening to someone totally unfamiliar to them?
Yeah, I mean, if you are familiar, then like I'd say like surprise, like it's like they're not expecting like that from me whatsoever. if you're not familiar, then I don't know. I feel like I don't even know what I would say to someone that's just not familiar with me. If it's a male listening, I would just kind of circle back to the point that I made before where like there really is no stigma now. Like if you think of it the way that I think of it, which is like, what are you afraid of? You're afraid of judgment. You're afraid of people thinking that there's something wrong with you. Like you don't want like, oh, the new girl that you're talking to. Like if you're in therapy, then it's like a red flag. It's not a fucking red. It's a red flag if there is something wrong and you don't do anything about it. Like totally. That's the red flag.
We also like love, like if a man tells me that he's in therapy, I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, yeah, he's thank working God. Through yeah, his emotional
like,
I, trauma.
Yeah, like right. It's not, you don't have to play that role for him.
Right,
like,
exactly. Yeah,
for free. Like there's right. someone that he's yeah. paying to do that. Yeah. So I would say that like, it's all about how you look at it. Like that's how I look at it is, like I'm not embarrassed by it. I don't care what people think about it unless it's like, unless the way that they react to it is that's what got me to do it or like at least try it. But yeah, like, I mean, anything negative that you have to say about it, you probably need therapy too.
totally. I think that you talking about it is going to, I mean, you've already started to see the impact it's having, but I think it could have an incredible impact on a lot of people. So I think it's really awesome that you're speaking up about it. And like a lot of people do fear judgment. But at the end of the day, like, you know, therapy is extremely helpful. And we just want to keep working on reducing the stigma because that's how this world's going to become a better place. So. Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone can probably benefit from talking to someone, even if it's not like a professional person. But thank you so much for coming
yeah,
here.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And we know this is different for you.
It is very much different. I will say that. Yeah. Because I mean, like even to like the point where like when I went on Kirk's show, it's like you really can't like open up because he's a ball buster. Like there's no right platform yet where like I could have a conversation like this.
Ding ding ding. That's like, where we come in.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they're like I've obviously wanted to talk about it, but I didn't really know where to do that. So yeah, thank you for giving me the platform.
Wow.
Honored. <You're welcome.
laughs> Yeah.
Do you want to kind of plug yourself a little bit, tell people where they can find you?
You might get a lot of girls you know, following you now.
They,
so sliding into the DM.
Like damaged guys. Damn. No. I think it's yeah. I think like my Instagram is just Jared Carabas, and then my Twitter has an underscore in between my name. So
nice.
Go push his buttons. Just kidding.
Woo.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And with that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye.